Welcome to VFN TV and the daily VFN radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T, light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
I am so excited and honored that you've joined us today on VFN TV. I'm going to go right to it. Today we're going to begin to talk about, you know, where we are in the state of this land and what does law mean? You know, we're a land of laws, as President George Washington said, and that, you know, we have legislative branches, we have lawyers, we have courts, we have all these different systems, but that's in the land. But what do we have with God? I mean, God has a law as well. You know, we call those laws really morality. And so we want to talk about that today. It's so important because I remember when I was going to school to learn how to do law enforcement, when I was in law enforcement, I remember my instructor showing this to me, and I was so surprised. I mean, I just assumed these two things. I don't know what I assumed, but it just really, really helped me understand how things should be. And so we're just going to go right to it. Take a look at this. I mean, you think about the law. When you think about the law, take a look. Look at this next slide here. You know, the law, for example, the laws of men, their laws are state legislature, our national legislatures decide to establish. You know, one of the main purposes of the legislative branch in our government system is to be able to establish laws. George Washington, as I said, President George Washington talked about it. You know, we're a land of laws. The whole thing that kind of keeps us in a place is the laws. The Constitution is a law. The Bill of Civil Rights is a law. And so when you think about law, I mean, this is what it means. You know, a stop sign says stop, a green light says go, you know, and it's very important that we're a land of laws. I mean, we have a ton of laws, as a matter of fact. But, and that's why we have lawyers and courts and that type of thing. But you think about morality now. As Christians, we have God's law in our heart, and God expects us. So you're looking at morality here, and the morality is defined according to the dictionary of relating to or concerned with principles or rules of right conduct, or the distinction between right and wrong, ethical, moral attitudes, you know, founded on the fundamental principles of right conduct rather than one legalities, enactment, or custom, moral obligation. So when you think about the aspect of these two, you have the law of the land, and then you have morality. But when you think about those two different things, take a look at the slide. They're really not the same thing. This is important because so many people right now are really, we're seeing some laws change and have seen for many years laws changed. And people are responding as if we can legalize morality. And if we could actually legalize morality, then there wouldn't have been a need for a new covenant. Because God had all the laws that he'd given to Moses, but the laws just prove that inside of us and our sin nature that we could not walk this out. And so there was grace that came in. But in that, there's still God's law, and that's called the moral law for us to follow. Still, we struggle. You know, I think about, you know, Paul in Romans chapter 7, when he's writing to the church of Rome, he says, you know, I got some good plans. I want to be able to follow this thing through, but there's something inside of me waging war against the law of my mind. When I want to go do good, in other words, when I want to follow the law, you know, something inside me wants to violate it, so I'm totally dependent upon Jesus Christ who empower me to walk this thing out. But we still are supposed to walk it out. Even though we fail, we're supposed to walk it out. So they're not the same. So legal law and morality are not the same. That's important because sometimes people feel like when you see a new law passed or people are trying to push a law, they act like God left the universe and that everything's changed now, that we left God. No, it just means man made a law that's contrary to the moral laws of God. That's what that actually means. God didn't change, and by the way, he doesn't expect us to change. But sometimes, as you can see this next slide here, but sometimes they can be the same. Go to the next. Sometimes they overlap. Sometimes you have a good law, a moral law, and of course morality, and they come together. And let's believe me, this has never been the case 100% of the time. Because when you think about it, I mean, some of the laws that have been passed over time, slavery was a law. It was legal in America to own slaves, to own human beings. And it wasn't It was legal to say that they were not citizens of the United States. No, that was immoral for that to even exist. So that had nothing to do with morality. Go back to the previous slide. So you go back to the previous slide and go back one more. That the morality is that the African American in America is a human being created in the image and the likeness of God and has equal rights, as Dr. King said, under the law. And the immoral law was to say that he didn't or that she didn't. So that's called, it's called there's a conflict that takes place right there. So let's just move back forward again. And so sometimes they overlap. For example, there could be, you know, a law that says, you know, on a day that you worship the Lord, you know, maybe it's Sunday for you, and it says that the owner of the business has to make an effort to allow you to be able to get off of work so you can go work. In other words, if they had somebody that would work on that Sunday and they refused to give it to that person and made you do it, you know, that would be, you know, right or wrong. But the law says that they have to make an effort to let you do that, according to Jay Sekulow. And so what happens is that thing intersects where that's a good law and it's a moral law. It kind of works together in the context of that. But also you had a situation back when you think about Sanger. She's the one that invented, you know, or, you know, sponsored the, you know, eugenics and things of that nature about literally, doing away with parts of the population that people thought that didn't deserve to live, that they were a burden on society. And they were passing laws, and they still, there's even laws today on the books that talk about eugenics and these type of things. And that actually is a law, or was a law, but it's immoral to take someone's life because you think they're not smart enough or they don't contribute enough to society. Another situation is when you think about abortion. There is a law. Up to a certain point, you can actually, you know, you can destroy your baby in your body. You can end the life of your baby, you know, in your body. You can kill your baby. I mean, right now there's a law that says that. It's Roe versus Wade. It was held up since 1973, I believe. No, that's a law, but that's not a moral law. That's murder because God says, do not commit murder. So let's go to the next slide here. So in Proverbs 29:2, he says, the Word of God says this, when the righteous thrive, the people rejoice. When the wicked rule, the people groan. And that the reason why that is because all of a sudden, when the wicked are ruling, people that don't want to follow God's principles, they start creating laws that make it very difficult for people who want to live a life in a way. I mean, obviously we're not perfect, and you know, we cry out for God's leadership, but we have a desire to follow God through the power of what we get through his finished work on the cross of Christ by his Spirit. But when the laws are contrary to that, it makes it very difficult. So what happens is the people groan because it's like, oh, I got this law that says, you know, I don't want my daughter to abort her child, but the laws are working against me because I raised her not to abort her child, but she goes out to the land and the land says it's legal for you to destroy your child in your body. And so the parents groan inside because the laws are against the laws of God, the morality and the context of that. And of course, later on, you find quite often the very young lady or lady that did end the life of her child, she begins to groan, kind of, you know, suffering in the future for what she had done in her past. And God's got grace for that. But I'm just talking about how these things, you know, are different and how they're not the same. It's so important.
We'll be right back.
In an epic encounter between Captain Ahab and a white whale, Herman Melville's Moby Dick has become one of the most famous novels of all time.
And yet, on October 18th, 1851, when it was first published in London as The Whale, it was a commercial flop. It wasn't until after his death that Melville was recognized as a premier novelist of the 19th century.
And extensive scholarly study of his writings reveals Melville knew and used the King James Bible. evidenced by his underlining and marginal notes in sections of his personal Bible, to his choice of character names like Elijah, Ishmael, and Ahab, to the dramatic themes in Moby Dick, influenced by the book of Noah, Job, and Ecclesiastes.
The Bible, continuing in its impact and influence in every aspect of culture.
Brought to you by Museum of the Bible.
That so happens that communism is a system that I disagree with philosophically. I would not prefer to live under a communist system. I happen to feel that the great moments of history have been those moments when individuals have been left free to think and to act. And I feel that communism often stands in the way of certain First Amendment privileges that we have in America, for instance, that I just couldn't adjust to.
Welcome back to VFN-TV with your host, Greg Lancaster.
So important. So let's go to the next slide. So it's very important that this is why people groan. You have the law and you have morality. Let's go to the next one. You know, as Christians, we're called to live moral lives, to strive, to attempt to do what's right, even though, like Paul said in Romans chapter 7, you know, I fell less than I used to, but the grace of God I'm able to walk. But I have a desire to walk right before God, you know, by his grace and in view of his mercy. And so in that creates a problem, because we're called to live moral lives. And so when they don't come together at all, there's no touching of the two, that's when that difficult happens. So look at this next one. So we can only do this walk by grace, but this whole thing, when they're totally separate, when the morality and law of the land separate, this is what feeds in to a lot of people who believe law is moral or law is morality. And all of a sudden they think, you know, if I could just change the law, I'll no longer have to listen to my parents anymore. If I could just change the law, we won't need school anymore. If I could just change the law, I can kill my kid in my womb. If I could just change the law, I could end my parents' life at an early age. If I could just end the law, this is what they think, if I could change the law, then I could say, you know, that this particular race of people is not as good as my race, that type of thing. And the thing is, it's like, that's law. That is not morality. So many people historically, based on this reality and this truth, have violated God's moral law while they live by the laws of the land, and they died in their last breath thinking they were morally correct before God. But the reality was, they were legally correct before man, but immoral towards God for how they treated someone or what they did, because they didn't know they needed to repent from that. So you look at this next particular slide here. This helps us out, and this is Dr. King's word. This is so important, because these things are going to collide. You're going to have morality, moral law, and you're going to have land of the man's law collide. But Dr. King said very specifically, he said, hate does not drive out hate. Only love can do that. And he said, darkness does not drive out darkness. Only light can do that. And that's so important. I think about this particular Meet the Press, where Dr. King was speaking. He was talking about an unjust law is no law at all. You think about that. An immoral law is no law at all. As a matter of fact, let's take a look right now. I believe it was in 1963 when he was having this meeting on Meet the Press. Take a look.
Our guest today on Meet the Press is Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., who is in San Francisco. On our panel of reporters in Washington, D.C., you have just met Lawrence Spivak. Our other reporters today are Tom Wickert of the New York Times, James J. Kilpatrick of the Richmond News Leader, and John Chancellor of NBC News. We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Wickert.
Dr. King, you said a moment ago that Alabama was a state that gives respectability to the resistance and defiance of the law. And you listed an observance of the law by local agencies in the South as one of the cardinal aims that you were seeking. Yet on March the 9th, you led the second march on Montgomery in violation of a federal injunction not to march. You said that order was unjust And John Lewis, one of your colleagues, said that the Negroes had a constitutional right to march, injunction or no injunction. Now, was that in keeping with the spirit of nonviolence and the restraint that has always characterized your movement? And could you explain your reasoning in defying the court order that day?
Well, let me say two things to that, Mr. Wicker. First, I did not consider myself defying a court order that particular day. I consulted with my attorneys before the march, and they stated that they felt that it was an invalid order, and that it would not be, that I would not be in contempt of court violating the court order if I led the march to the point of having a moral confrontation with the state troopers at the point where the people were brutalized on Sunday. So I still don't consider that breaking a court order or breaking what I consider an unjust law. On the other hand, I must be honest enough to say that I do feel that there are two types of laws. One is a just law and one is an unjust law. I think we all have moral obligations to obey just laws. On the other hand, I think we have moral obligations to disobey unjust laws, because non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as is cooperation with good. I think the distinction here is that when one breaks a law that conscience tells him is unjust, he must do it openly, he must do it cheerfully, he must do it lovingly, he must do it civilly, not uncivilly, and he must do it with a willingness to accept the penalty. And any man who breaks a law that conscience tells him is unjust and willingly accepts the penalty by staying in jail in order to arouse the conscience of the community on the injustice of the law is at that moment expressing the very highest respect for law.
Well, I can sympathize with a good deal of that, but it seems to me you get into a very difficult point here at which one man's conscience is set, in fact, above the conscience of society, which has invoked the law. How are we to enforce law when a doctrine is preached that one man's conscience may tell him that the law is unjust when other men's conscience don't tell them that?
And I think you enforce it, and I think you deal with it by not allowing anarchy to develop. I do not believe in defying the law, as many of the segregationists do. I do not believe in evading the law, as many of the segregationists do. The fact is that most of the segregationists and racists that I see are not willing to suffer enough for their beliefs in segregation, and they are not willing to go to jail. I think the chief norm for guiding the situation is the willingness to accept the penalty. And I don't think any society can call an individual irresponsible who breaks a law and willingly accepts the penalty if conscience tells him that that law is unjust. And I think that this is a long tradition in our society. It's a long tradition in biblical history. Meshach and Abednego broke an unjust law, and they did it because they had to be true to a higher moral law. The early Christians practiced civil disobedience in a superb manner. Academic freedom would not be a reality today if it had not been for Socrates, and if it had not been for Socrates' willingness to practice civil disobedience. And I would say that in our own history, there's nothing that expresses a massive civil disobedience any more than the Boston Tea Party, and yet we give this to our young people and our students as a part of the great tradition of our nation. So I think we're in good company when we break unjust laws, and I think those who are willing to do it and accept the penalty are those who are part of the saving of the nation.
Think about that, for the saving of the nations. Dr. King was warning us. He says, this is how you save a nation, when you begin to have this moral confrontation. And so you're looking at, this would be an immoral confrontation. But when you think about, let's go to the next slide. So when you think about it, you know, when law, which is like the hammer of the law, is coming against morality, we, like Dr. King, would just say that's an unjust law, which is no law at all. And so you think about Proverbs 29:22, which we talked about. And after this break, we're going to be talking about, back up a little bit, back where we were. And right after this break, we're going to be talking about Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 through 12, because he talks to us specifically about how our behavior, how our attitude needs to be. As a matter of fact, God's not upset or concerned about this reality of the environment. Take a look at what Jesus told us right here. He told us this specific statement in Luke 10:2-3. He says, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into the harvest field. Go, I am sending you out like lambs amongst wolves." That's from Jesus. He's saying, listen, stand up for God. Stand up in a loving and a kind way. And there's nobody, I don't think, that's better for us to imitate than an American citizen, American Christian citizen, which I believe was an apostle, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. More when we get back from the break.
We'll be right back.
The key to a healthy marriage is to keep your eyes wide open before you wed and half closed thereafter.
For Family Talk, here's Dr. James Dobson.
Last year, there were close to 2.5 million divorces in the United States. And part of the problem is the tendency for young men and women to marry virtual strangers. Oh, I know a typical couple talks for countless hours before the courtship period, and they believe they know each other. But a dating relationship is designed to conceal information, not reveal it. Consequently, the bride and groom often enter into marriage with an array of private opinions about how life will be lived after the wedding, and the stage is set for major problems. For this reason, I strongly believe that each engaged couple should participate in at least 6 to 10 sessions with a competent marriage counselor in order to identify the assumptions that each partner holds and to work through areas of potential conflict. Some couples discover through this process that they have major problems that hadn't surfaced until then, and they agree to either postpone or call off the wedding. Others work through their conflicts and proceed toward marriage with increased confidence. Premarital counseling is the key. If the tragedy of divorce could be reduced by even 5%, it would certainly be worth the effort.
Welcome back to VFN TV with your host, Greg Lancaster.
We are talking about, law versus morality. And when you think about that in the context of, this is the big argument. It's always been the big argument when you think about it, John, that, men are trying to save themselves by the law and some sort of righteous law. And when you see the legal argument, it's like you always lose. And it's normally the people that are, trying to a law that they like. I call it the okra law, not Oprah, but okra, like okra. The vegetable thing or whatever it is. And, they like it. They like that particular law, and they just think, everybody should not like okra, oysters, people shouldn't like oysters are not kosher and all that kind of stuff. And, but that's their preference.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with God. It has everything to do with sin, but it has nothing to do with God. And so this legal argument, when you think about this legal argument, that it's been around since the beginning of time. And it was proven out by God when you look, at, us over a period of time since the Garden of Eden. We've had a few little issues, with the law. And right now, the one thing that one of the tools in Satan's chest, which was even written about by Saul Alinsky, is make them live up to their own rules. And the rule of God is grace. It's mercy and empowerment by his finished work on the cross that enables us to actually walk rightly before God. And any good that happens in our life, as Jesus says, it's God, it's not us.
And that can be really confusing to people who try to create laws within their own nature to try to make things work. And normally they do in front of men, but they're crashing and burning when they're not in the eyes of men because they live their whole life about trying to live a self-righteous life. I mean, Jesus talked about it, about the Pharisees. He said, you know, you're whitewashed tombs. You know, on the outside, you basically, you look like you're right, but the inside, you're full of dead man's bones. Mm. You know, you're constantly talking about the outside of the cup, not the inside of the cup. And God's talking about our hearts. And so we should never panic over anyone who is trying to make a law, because we don't, our righteousness with God is not based off of the law. It's based off the cross of Christ and the grace of Christ, and that a law, no matter if it was good or bad, I mean, you think about it, you know, do not murder has been on the, you know, books for a law for quite some time in America. And based on my years in law enforcement, even though there was a law, people still took people's lives.
Imagine that.
That's amazing how that works, you know? And so creating a law, you cannot legislate morality. But it's really cool when you have a legal system that helps perpetuate those who desire to live the best they can, a moral life before God. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so you have people right now in today's environment, they're pushing like crazy on legalism from a world's perspective, and like, if you just change this law, then I'll be right. And it's like, it has nothing to do with being right. I mean, even if the law said, you know, be perfect, and then it doesn't make you perfect because the law says it's perfect. It's just a law that just says be perfect. If any law at all, you could think of, there's thousands of them. They said you couldn't even stack them up. There's so many of them. But there's people right now that are trying to push laws, and there's a lot of folks that are panicking because of what does that mean to Christians? What does that mean to, you know, the kingdom of God? Well, truly, you know, it means absolutely nothing in the context of it. But it does mean this, you know, it's not happening by accident, and it's not happening because God's going, hey, I want to hurt you or anything like that. We got to ask ourselves, is it happening because we said we were moral? We said that, you know, we are a one nation under God, but we live like we were immoral, and we live. Now, I'm not talking to anybody that's not Christian here. I'm just talking about people who profess to be Christ followers that we've sinned against God, not the people in the world, right. Not the people that's involved in the world's view of the legal system.
I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so glad that you've joined us. Don't forget, you can join us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Download our app and sign up for our newsletter, The Torch, at vfntv.com. I've enjoyed our time together. God bless.